Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Devin.
And I'm Sarah.
And we are back.
We're back. And we're back doing our first episode after we did our first ever Hellbent interview.
Which was so fun.
Yeah. And that's just, you know, for future trivia reference.
Uh-huh.
So people know.
Right.
Like when they're at trivia night and people right. ask who was the first interview on Hellbent, you right. can say Sarah Coon.
Right. And you just know that because...
In our head, that's what's going to happen.
Exactly.
Like, that's how we envision our futures. One of us sitting somewhere at trivia night being like, I know. Because I'm one of the hosts. Guys, these are the sort of...
Daydreams
of podcasters. Lady podcasters.
Lady podcasters.
Yeah, but we got a lot of good feedback on our interview with Sarah, but... Let's talk about what we're going to discuss
today
first.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So first, as always, we're going to start with some listener feedback and general updates. Then we're going to move into everyone's favorite block, Trump and GOP bullshit.
Yeah, there's a lot of conflicts of interest stories in here, and they should all concern you.
Yes, they are terrifying.
And then, of course, some DOJ bullshit.
Always. And then... Next, we're going to go into some international bullshit. We're going to talk about the French presidential election and a little bit of Russia update.
Yeah, we definitely want to give a larger context as well to the French election, what that means for the EU as a whole, how they interact with Russia. Obviously, Marine Le Pen is in there and Putin loves her, but yeah lots of stuff.
And then we have our gratitude check, our favorite part.
Much fucking needed.
And then finally, it's Monday, so we do the Donald Trump dishonor in Dick Watery. And guys!
Oh my god.
Okay, we just have so much to talk about.
It's bananas because we actually had to leave out a lot of dishonorable mentions because we had a lot of feelings about our one dishonorable mention and then the quote-unquote winner. Yeah, right. So we had to cut a lot of it. But a lot of you guys sent us really good ones. We just want to acknowledge that.
Right.
All right, Devin, let's get into listener feedback for today. What do we got?
Well, first off, like we said, we got lots of positive feedback on our interview with Sarah Coon, which makes us so happy.
Yeah.
She was so awesome to talk to and just so smart. And we have, you guys, we have so many great guests lined up.
Yeah, you guys, we are bursting at the seams.
Yeah.
It's taking every ounce of energy not to give it away.
I know.
But if you're on Patreon, you get, when we do have guests, we give you exclusive announcements there.
Right.
So look out for that. We have a great guest on Thursday and then lined up basically for the rest of the month.
Oh, yeah. We've got a bunch of really great guests. So stay tuned, guys. Let's see. We also got some other really good feedback.
Yeah. So Sarah reached out to us and she said, thank you for creating a political podcast where women are centered and the hosts don't get knee-jerk defensive when you call them out.
Yeah. I mean, it's not easy hearing constructive criticism, you know, but we feel like it's the very least we can do.
Yeah. It's kind of bananas that that is a bare minimum.
Yeah.
To listen. But it's... We often are missing that from people within privileged groups, including ourselves, which are white women.
Absolutely.
But yeah, we are just, honestly, we're thankful to have an audience that honestly keeps us super fucking honest.
Yeah.
And you guys are on top of it. You're so smart.
Yeah.
And you do help us become better feminists.
You really do. So, it's amazing.
And it makes our podcast better.
It does.
So thank you to Sarah and thank you for everyone whoever gives us constructive feedback for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I also loved Nevi on Twitter. She tweeted at us and she said, just here to say I would absolutely buy a Martha shirt. Hashtag not your secretary.
And guys, we have to give a quick Martha update. The original poster got back to us and Martha is now in our group.
Martha is in the group, which is a big get
for Helen. Yeah, so like, reach out to her to tell her how cool she is. So basically, Redacted, the name of the man who was being a dickwad.
This is classified information.
Redacted just came to my office.
This is what Allie said.
Allie said, the original poster. So Redacted just came to my office and said that Martha told him they are Twitter famous and he's going to work on his sexism.
Because, you guys, I asked Allie if I could tweet the story and I took out her name.
Yeah.
I took out Martha's name.
Right.
I took out any signifiers. It got retweeted a bunch.
Yeah.
So people were here for Martha on Twitter as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
So we're thinking we might want to do hashtag not your secretary merch.
Yeah.
Hashtag what would Martha do? I don't know.
What would Martha do?
Let us know if you're into that, because we do have Fuck This Shit O'Clock on the website, as well as we have some Dick Wads Be Gone stuff coming soon.
That's coming up. Yep.
Yeah. And you can go to hellbent.com/shop.
Yes.
Okay, so we wanted to also give an update on Patreon.
Yes.
So we're only about $75 away from reaching our first goal of $500 a month.
Yeah.
And that goal, we set that because that helps us comfortably cover our base operating costs, including transportation, audio equipment, hosting services, etc.
Yes. So, and then, so a reminder of the rewards, at $1 a month, we will follow you on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
We love seeing your updates. At $5 a month, you get access to exclusive extra content. Mm-hmm. So our mini podcasts and weird pictures of us doing weird things. at $10 a month, each patron gets a shout out on the pod at the end of the month. And
each new patron.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And your name is on hellbent.com.
Mm-hmm.
HellbentPodcast.com. Also, we just added, at $10 a month, you get an entry into like this raffle that we're going to do that you could win a 30-minute Skype sesh with me and Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be really fun. At $25 a month, you get a specialized recording, maybe for your voicemail, maybe to send your ex, your dickwad ex, a salty message.
Yeah, I mean, we're open to it. And then at the top tiers, $50 a month, you get a personalized shout out during the Maxine Waters Awards. Mm-hmm. You get to be an honorable mention.
Yep.
And then you get to tell us why. So that's pretty awesome.
Yep.
At $75 a month, you get monthly Skype hang sessions with Devin and I, if you're into that kind of thing.
Yep.
And then at $100 a month, you get to be a guest on Hellbent.
Yep. And tell us all the cool things that are going on in your life.
Yeah. So any little bit you can contribute is much appreciated.
Yes.
We have a lot of $1 and $5 a month donors, and that adds up.
It's
really great. And it does help push us forward. So
it does.
We're really appreciative of that. And then the last thing, our Facebook group.
Yes.
We're close to hitting 500 members.
Yes.
And so we think that when we hit 500, we're going to do, I think we're going to do a little drawing for someone in the group to get Hellbent swag.
Right.
Hellbent swag of choice.
Right.
So, again, go to our Twitter page. Mm-hmm. It's at Twitter. No, don't go to at Twitter.
No, don't do that.
At Jack will not be able to give you Hellbent swag. Go to at Hellbent Pod. If you see our pinned tweet, there is a link to the group directly from there.
Yes. And then on Facebook, the group is called Dick Wads Be Gone, a Hellbent podcast fan group.
Yeah. So on brand. All right, Devin, let's get into Trump land / GOP bullshit, which is never fucking ending. So there's a few conflicts of interest stories from the Trump administration that are concerning. But let's talk first about this bananas interview he did with the AP.
I mean, like, I feel like calling it bananas is being really nice to it.
Yeah.
It was so all over the place. He didn't form complete sentences.
Mm-mm.
He said that he had one of the best chemistries with German Chancellor Angela Merkel, which, please stop.
He literally refused to shake her hand. I don't know what that's even supposed to be.
And AP had to transcribe several of Trump's comments as unintelligible.
It was a one-on-one interview. Like, how is this unintelligible?
I mean,
like, usually that happens when there's like, back talk or people talking over. Yeah, crosstalk. Excuse me. Yeah. So there's a few things that we want to highlight. Devin talked about a couple.
Yeah.
I don't think we're gonna get to them all, but he argued that people should not hold him to the promises he made in his 100-day plan.
Right, because the 100-day plan was just, you know, it wasn't a promise. It was just...
He was just blowing smoke.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
He also claimed the border wall will cost less than $10 billion, but it might be more, quote, if I do a super duper.
Which, you cannot call major, structural projects super duper. You just can't.
What does that even
mean? I don't know. No one knows. And honestly, if he thinks it's going to cost less than $10 billion, he's literally drunk. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. He also refused to criticize WikiLeaks for publishing stolen emails from DNC, which is not super surprising. And then, honestly, one of the oddest parts of this interview and this whole interview was, like we said, bananas. he said he had stopped paying attention to the mainstream media. He specifically called out CNN. But then AP was like, no, you literally just referred to them like a couple of minutes ago.
Right, like 2 minutes.
And Trump's before. Like, no, I didn't.
Yeah.
That was wild.
It was weird.
Yeah.
And then he called the media very stupid for pointing out his flip-flopping on the Chinese currency manipulation. Mm-hmm. And then wrongly suggested devaluation only stopped under him. So basically he was like, well, I called them currency manipulators because they were then. But now that I'm president, they've stopped because they respect me so much.
You guys...
No.
This is a person who, not to undersell it, is not fucking qualified to be president.
He can't string sentences together.
He doesn't know anything. He doesn't want to work. He's going on golf trips all the time. He doesn't want this job. That's honestly, and I've said this before, that's one of the most galling things about this bullshit. It's, of course, the bigotry and all that stuff is horrendous. Yeah. But on top of this, he doesn't even want to fucking do anything.
Right. He wanted it because
for
it was like
attention.
He was like a kid who, or like a dog who chases a car and then catches it.
Yep.
So.
This is everyone's nightmare.
Yes.
Let's also talk about now, not only does he not want this job, but it seems very clear to me that he is corrupt as fuck.
Oh,
and is funneling money via the presidency to be shady.
Yeah, absolutely. So basically, USA Today had a really great, very in-depth article about Trump real estate properties.
Yeah.
And like his personally held real estate properties.
Yep.
So Trump has condos worth about $250 million.
Yeah.
That some are for sale, some are being held. And
this was not disclosed.
This was not disclosed.
He didn't have to disclose it, but it's again another flag.
Exactly.
We don't know what's in his tax returns. We don't know how expansive his efforts could be to enrich himself via the presidency or how open he is to corruption.
Exactly.
To foreign officials currying favor.
Right. And so the properties range in value from $200,000 to $35 million, which is, I mean, a huge spread. But what's also really interesting.
Well, and there's at least 422 luxury condos and penthouses from New York to Las Vegas. So, and 12 mansion lots. So there's, well above 400 properties.
Right. And so what's interesting is that to buy real estate, like an individual sale of real estate, you can form a shell company, like an LLC, to protect your privacy. So we actually have no way of knowing who's buying these properties.
Yeah. So that's I think where the worry is. And, you know, unlike developments where Trump licenses his name, which I think is more often how he does business.
Yeah. Just like a flat fee.
Yeah. Just a flat fee to a developer. These are individual properties directly owned by his companies
that
ultimately can enrich him. And like Devin said, you know, it's very easy to set up a shell company.
Yes.
And to buy something, one of these properties from a shell company, and then for no one to be able to trace back who it is, and for us to not know if it's, like we've said, a foreign official trying to get, like, some sweetened deal
because
he basically bribed Trump.
Right, exactly.
He or she,
and they, you know, maybe they paid over market for a property or, you know, whatever. There's no transparency, and, you know, it's just completely corrupt.
It's very concerning, and this story is one of those that flew below the radar.
Yeah.
In any sort of quote-unquote normal presidency, this would be bananas.
Yeah.
Like, but this is just something that happens. Like,
exactly.
This is our normal, apparently.
Yeah. Speaking of not normal.
Yes. So this dovetails into another story about, you know, where money is going
and
that is being funneled into Trump.
Right.
Okay. So, there was a report in Mike.com, MIC, and then Rachel Maddow did sort of piggybacked off that report and added some context of her own. So Trump's inauguration.
Yeah.
They raised a record $107 million. And just for context, Obama had raised a record $53 million.
Right.
And his was like the biggest inauguration in history.
Right.
They had huge crowds. They had big concerts. They used all that money.
All the money.
They used about $50 million. We don't know how much Trump spent on his inauguration, but we can guess it wasn't $107 million.
I can't imagine that Three Doors Down commands huge, like... And appearance fees.
Yeah, then there was no one there. So this is where things get murky. So a day before Trump's inauguration, a businessman named R.W. Habush gave two donations to Trump's inauguration committee. One was 166,000 and another was 500,000. So $666,000 worth of money. And right. then...
So, yeah. So then 2.5 weeks later...
Funny enough,
Habush's son was found himself in a pair of high-level meetings at the White House. So he met with...
Which is bananas. Like, there's no reason why Trump donor should be meeting with National Security Council officials and his chief of staff.
Yeah, and his...
Or chief strategist.
Yeah, Bannon.
Steve Bannon.
And so basically, the subject had nothing to do with anything. It was how to open up businesses in Venezuela,
It wasn't like pleasantries.
Right.
They wanted to talk about opening up business with Venezuela, which has been heavily sanctioned by the United States. And
right.
this occurred because 44 people were killed in anti-government protests in 2014.
Right. So basically this guy, the son mm-hmm. of this businessman, got a personal meeting with Bannon and National Security Council guys mm-hmm. to talk about opening businesses in Venezuela.
Yeah. And, you know, Venezuela's state-run oil company also donated $500,000 to Trump's inauguration, which is... also bananas because that country is like on the brink and
right.
apparently has no money, but
right.
somehow they were able to scrape together $500,000 for Trump's inauguration. So Rachel Maddow's like, what were they expecting to get for their money? As
right.
we've seen with this report from Mike, someone got a high-level meeting and tried to basically argue for sanctions to be lifted.
Right.
Like, how is that not bribery?
And in a normal administration, like, National Security Council doesn't meet with people for stuff like this. And,
yeah.
you know, $500,000 donors don't get to, like, sit with high-level officials just for funsies.
Yeah. And Mark Feierstein, who's a National Security Council alum from the Obama administration, he said, if this account is true, it raises serious questions about the conduct of foreign policy by the Trump administration. Those meetings never should have taken place at any level, let alone with senior officials in the West Wing.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly enough, a different reporter named Christina Wilkie from the Huffington Post,
mm-hmm.
she started a hashtag Citizen Sleuth project that
mm-hmm.
you guys might have seen going around Twitter. So she's compiling a list of Trump inauguration donors, and she's trying to verify that all the names, amounts they gave, and addresses, etc., are all correct.
Right.
She's already found several discrepancies.
Right.
She's like, there's too many incorrect records for it to feel coincidental.
Right.
So she's going to be investigating those and reporting on them. And she said, I heard from a bunch of people who never made the donations the Trump inaugural says they did.
Mm-hmm.
Every hashtag Citizen Sleuth deserves a medal. So I'm very curious to see what comes from that investigation.
Yeah, and like, to what end? Like, mm-hmm. to what end is this money being used?
Yeah, and again, we don't have his tax returns. So we have no idea how far-reaching and how possible corruption could be.
Absolutely.
Let's move over into the governance
yes.
side of things. I mean, obviously this relates to governance,
right.
but what is happening now within the administration?
Right. So basically, the Department of Justice
mm-hmm.
has threatened to pull federal law enforcement grant money from, quote, sanctuary cities.
Yeah, so they warned 9 jurisdictions about this. So California, Chicago, New Orleans, Philadelphia, Las Vegas, Miami, Milwaukee, and New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was a lot to unpack here. The DOJ said in a press release that many of these areas were, quote, crumbling under the weight of illegal immigration and violent crime. They cited murder rates in Chicago and New York City, which have both seen record low levels of crime.
That's, so, like, my favorite part of this is, like, they're...
The data doesn't even back it
right.
up.
Right. They're yeah. literally throwing out data that... it's not data. It's literally made up stories.
There's a lot of dog whistles too. This same DOJ press release said, cities like Chicago and New York, quote, continue to see gang murder after gang murder,
mm-hmm.
the predictable consequence of the city's soft on crime stance. So I think they said this specifically related to New York.
Right.
The Brennan Center, which is a nonpartisan group, says that the New York City murder rate has fallen 87% since 1990. And actually, Birmingham and just the state of Alabama as a whole is doing way worse.
Right, absolutely.
Than New York City. So the state that Sessions used to represent.
Right.
Like, look at your home.
Right, dude. Look at your life, look at your choices.
Yeah.
And then so Ned Resnikoff from Think Progress said, quote, it's clear that Sessions' real beef with New York City is that a thriving, safe, multiracial society is against everything he stands for.
Yeah, it doesn't fit his narrative.
He's a racist motherfucker.
And he's trying to throw dog whistle after dog whistle,
right,
to create a narrative that essentially gets non-white people out of
absolutely
this country. That's what he's trying to do.
Yeah,
it's pretty obvious,
right?
And actually, our Attorney General, California Attorney General Javier Becerra, he said fear-mongering and falsehoods will not intimidate our state from law enforcement or our people in an attempt to bully states and localities into carrying out the new administration's unsound deportation plan. It's reckless and it jeopardizes public safety.
Yes.
So California's like, fuck no.
Fuck you.
Yeah. Fuck you. But speaking of.
Oh, yeah.
So did you see the story about the budget and how they're trying to take a hard line on yes the border wall?
Yes.
So they're threatening a government shutdown if they don't get some sort of deal about border wall funding in there.
Although, you know, it's really funny because also, you know, high level rank and file Republicans, like even Paul Ryan is like, we need to keep the government open. Like, yeah, calm the fuck down.
I don't think they're as bullish about a border wall.
They're not.
Because as we know, Trump has repeatedly bragged about how Mexico is going to pay for it.
Not going to happen.
And the Mexican president is like, fuck no.
Yeah, fuck you.
And so now he's trying to get, it's wild. They're trying to get American taxpayers to pay for it. And again, the border wall costs an absurd amount of money.
It's There's obscene.
No way that people are going to want to pay for that.
It's obscene.
Yeah.
It's obscene. And even if, you know, the calculations for the wall itself are X number of dollars, that doesn't include, you know, protesters,
mm-hmm,
you know, the cost of, you know, buying the land that you need.
You guys, if there's been no indications of this, let's be clear. Trump has not thought anything through.
No.
No, he's not thought anything through. And that's the kindest thing we can say. So he, you know, he went, took to Twitter, as he always does, to attack Democrats for opposing the wall. And then he said that Mexico would pay for it at, quote, a later date. It's like, yeah, dude, no.
No, no, it's not going to happen.
And so it's, you know, Nancy Pelosi was like, the wall is, in my view, immoral, expensive, unwise. And when the president says, well, I promised a wall during my campaign, I don't think he said he was going to pass billions of dollars of cost of the wall to the taxpayer.
Also, interestingly enough, he keeps talking about he's going to roll out these massive tax cuts on Wednesday. So it's like, you can't spend $10 billion on a bullshit wall and cut taxes. Doesn't work that way.
Unless, you know, our economy is like completely booming.
Exactly. And he was recently in that AP interview that was completely batshit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they asked him if he would sign a bill without the border wall funding, and Trump replied, quote, I don't know yet. People want that border wall. My base definitely wants the border wall, which, you know what, asshole? You don't just answer to your base. You answer to the American people as a whole.
Yeah, you are the president of the United States. It doesn't matter if your base wants. And it's also a weird thing to admit.
Yeah, like, it is a weird thing to admit.
It's clear. I mean, obviously, politicians do things that they think are going to be favorable for re-election or
right
for, you know, rating, approval rating. But
they don't
to
really say
that out loud.
Yeah.
Was that in that same AP interview?
Yeah, it was that. Okay. No, it was that AP interview.
Yeah, and also, so Trump's budget chief, Mulvaney, he then tried to say that the administration is willing to negotiate with Democrats by sort of funding insurance subsidies under the ACA in exchange for support for wall funding. And Democrats are like, fuck no.
I know. Schumer said everything except fuck no.
Like, I mean, Are we really going to take away money from, like, cancer patients to, like, build a wall? Like,
yeah,
this
no
is the most absurd thing.
Yep.
And just, you know, for context, Senate Republicans have to get 60 votes to pass this legislation. So Mitch McConnell can't go fucking nuclear on this.
No, he can't.
So it's impossible to pass this bill that has border wall funding in there, mm-hmm, without, like, Democrats aren't going to vote for it.
There's
so you're
no
not going to be able to pass it because there's only 52 people who caucus with Republicans,
right,
or who are Republicans.
Right. And honestly, you know, and it's also pretty clear that a lot of, like we said, the rank and file, mm-hmm, Republicans are not interested.
They're not gung-ho about the wall, mm-hmm, either. They probably think that's, I mean, if they're true conservatives, they want to balance a budget.
Right.
And you can't spend, and then
cut. And
the math doesn't
add up. No, it just doesn't.
All right, Devin, let's get into some international bullshit, and with a specific focus on the French presidential election and then some Russia stuff toward the end.
Mm-hmm.
So let's give a primer. What happened during this presidential election in France, and mm-hmm, then what can we look forward moving ahead?
Right. So basically, the French presidential process. Mm-hmm. They do kind of like a jungle primary. So, I mean, I guess it's kind of a weird thing to say. But but basically, they had, I think, 7 or 8 candidates mm-hmm. who were all running. And if you didn't get more than 30% of the vote, then the top two go to a runoff. Mm. So basically that's what happened. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a runoff on May 7th between Marine Le Pen, who is the far right populist leader of the National Front Party, which is, we'll get into it. Mm-hmm. And then Emmanuel Macron, who is a centrist pro-EU newcomer.
People keep using the term centrist, but he's really center left.
He's center
really
left.
A pragmatist. I mean, it's like, you know, he's not a socialist. So I guess
he's not a socialist.
Considered center, apparently.
Yeah, and he has some more conservative, like, social policy mm-hmm. on his platform. So that's, I think, why they call
him
a center.
Social programming?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, more moderate social programming.
Spending.
Yeah.
Yeah. Marine Le Pen is concerning.
Oh, my God.
She is like a trumped up Trump.
She's,
it feels like.
I mean, so first of all, the National Front Party are what they were called, softcore Holocaust deniers. Like, ew.
What?
You know, they're xenophobic, anti-EU, anti-immigration, anti-Semitic, and pro-Russia, and basically the steaming pile of horse shit that they sound like on paper.
Yeah, she's about everything that you would expect from that kind of a group.
Yeah, and so there was a really interesting quote from this Vox article. Quote, she has appealed to a swath of French society that feels overlooked and undercut by the European Union and the shift towards globalization. People who have seen their jobs and livelihoods move to other parts of the world. And I would just like to say, this sounds a lot like the, quote, white working class voter.
Yeah, she's doing a lot of, like, eschewing of the elite,
yes,
so to speak. And,
right,
like, there's a lot of very similar themes. But
yeah, and she's also taken, like, really hardline anti-ISIS and anti-terrorism rhetoric, mm-hmm. And called the current political leadership basically weak and ineffectual against terrorism in France, which also sounds remarkably like the orange Cheeto currently mouth-breathing in our White House.
Yep. Also, what I found interesting mm-hmm. about this election is pretty much everyone except the very left-leaning candidate, Mélenchon.
Yeah.
They were like, seriously, vote for Macron.
Yeah, this is ridiculous.
Like, there's a difference between whatever, quote unquote, a centrist and someone who's like gonna destroy our country,
right,
and is terrible in every single way.
Yeah. And well, it's interesting. So Nate Silver of 538, mm-hmm. you know, had these series of tweets on why we shouldn't freak out. He mm-hmm. basically said, quote, nationalist candidates have done pretty badly since Trump won. Wilders and Le Pen faded down in the stretch run. Hofner underperformed in Austria.
Hoffer.
Mm-hmm. Hoffer.
Yeah, so he's talking about other European countries that have had similar sort of far right nationalist,
quote, populist nationalist
threats.
Okay, but Nate Silver also said that we shouldn't freak out about Trump winning the election.
I don't think he said that, though.
He did.
He was very bullish during the election season. He said, it is very possible for Trump to win.
Yeah, that's
here's
true.
Here's our probability. And he actually said this on Twitter. He said, okay, people want to distrust polls now, but they forget that Remain and Leave for Brexit, mm-hmm. it was +1 or +2.
Right.
Hillary Clinton was like +2 or +3.
Right.
And he has been very specific that the Comey letter put Trump over the line.
100%.
He's saying, listen, the polls right now show Macron at +26.
That is
so
true.
We're taking everything with a grain of salt. We don't want to say, oh, it's in the bag. No one feels that way after
right.
the election of Trump.
Right.
But there's a big difference between being +2 or +3 and +26.
Now, but what's also interesting is that if there is low voter turnout, mm-hmm. Or, you know, because a lot of French people in polls have said, like, well, we're just not going to vote at all.
Mm.
And that would swing the vote towards Le Pen.
Yeah, I think, and I've heard this before, low voter turnout would benefit Le Pen.
Yes.
And we're seeing that sort of further left candidates not refuse to endorse anybody.
Right.
Which sounds very familiar.
Yeah, right?
Because it took Bernard a while to actually sort of endorse
Bernard.
Hillary.
Bernard. Okay. Bernard.
But yeah, let's... So that's sort of the background there. The good thing about the French election is I believe this final round is in 2 weeks. So
it
we don't
is.
Have to spend like a long-ass time like stressing out about this,
right,
or like projecting and
right,
talking about it all the time. The result is going to happen in a couple weeks. So
mm-hmm.
knock on all the wood.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Marine Le Pen a little bit further and
yeah.
her history with Putin and just Russia
and
in
Russia.
General.
So, you know, back in March, I think we touched on this a while mm-hmm. ago, but Putin welcomed Le Pen to Russia as if she were already a head of state.
Mm-hmm.
She was the only candidate to meet with Putin during the election cycle.
Yeah, and we talked about this in the podcast when we discussed this.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, if you thought that Putin was like pro-Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's very obvious that he's pro-Le Pen. Like,
right.
he didn't do this with Trump. He didn't welcome her, like, head of state. He didn't essentially endorse Trump.
Right.
He's doing it with Le Pen.
Right. Well, and she definitely sees herself as a leader in the vein of Putin and Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, quote, "It is the world of Vladimir Putin. It is the world of Donald Trump in the United States. It is the world of Mr. Modi in India. And I think I am the one who shares this vision of cooperation." So basically, she sees herself...
What does that mean, a vision of cooperation?
So, like, the one...
Because she wants to leave the EU,
right.
Doesn't she?
Yeah.
And that's concerning.
Yeah. Oh, God, that's very concerning. Well, it's just... You know, I'm not really sure what she means by this.
Maybe she means with Putin, with Trump. Yeah.
With Modi.
Because Trump has said that a lot with Putin. Like, oh, I just want to improve relations with Russia.
Right.
But it's like sucking up to Putin isn't going to do that.
Right. Well, also, interestingly enough, Russia launched a smear campaign against Macron.
Mm-hmm.
Russia and Russian money has financed National Front and Le Pen in the past. And it's pretty clear that they're financing this run.
Yeah. I think they're using very similar techniques, like bots on the internet to sort of depress turnout. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. I mean, Moscow has been accused of interfering in politics across Europe through propaganda and disinformation, this Vice article
was
saying.
And I'm hoping that the people of France learn from our election. And actually, I don't remember who said this, but I think it might have been Macron.
Mm-hmm.
Someone said that the election of Trump has motivated a lot of French voters.
It was Macron.
And you saw that in his competitors' responses.
Right.
They immediately were like, seriously, vote for this guy. Even the the establishment sort of
conservative
was like, vote for Macron.
Yeah, this is ridiculous.
But yeah, again, like we said, not in the bag.
And I just feel like it's becoming like a big pissing match of like dumbass Olympics. Like, Great Britain's like, we got Brexit. United States is like, hold my beer. We got Trump. And France is now like, Le Pen. But anyway, so let's take a hot second to talk about the EU.
Yeah.
So the EU is a very kind of complicated topic, obviously. Mm-hmm. We don't have time to get really into it, but I do want to say that after Brexit, the EU is having a rough time.
Mm-hmm.
The EU has been plagued with slow economic growth and immigration crises and growing unrest in member countries.
Mm-hmm.
Losing France as a member would almost certainly, you know, be a death blow to the EU, and it would certainly crash the euro if France removes itself from the euro and goes back to the franc.
Yeah, which is what Le Pen wants to do.
Yes.
And polls show that most French citizens do not want to dump the euro.
No.
For the franc.
Well, and the thing is to introduce the franc, it would cost about $32 billion in additional interest debt. And also the EU would see a lot of that as like debt default, which is a really bad move. So Le Pen getting out of the EU is more than just destabilizing the euro, though. To remove another member from the EU is to basically end it.
Mm.
And that's what Putin wants.
Mm-hmm.
You know, He wants to destabilize the West. And her foreign policy views would call into question France's commitment to its security alliance with Western powers such as the US and Germany.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more than just the euro. It's more than just this, like, cooperation.
Mm-hmm.
It's an actual, like, alliance that would be sort of undermined.
Mm-hmm.
And there's already sort of, like, economic uncertainty and low-grade panic from global markets over the possibility of a Le Pen victory, but obviously that's just... You know, we don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So lots of dynamics going on here.
Yes.
It's going to be really interesting to see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
I also think part of the thing to watch is how much, what the coalition looks like.
Yes.
Because it's not just a vote for president.
Right.
I believe it's like who's going to make up the government.
Exactly. And that's going to be in June. And Le Pen is unlikely to get majority. Even if she does win, she's unlikely to get majority in parliament.
Mm-hmm.
But there are certain referendums that she can enact without parliament.
Yeah. So lots going on
lots
there.
Going on.
We will continue to keep our eyes out on that.
Mm-hmm.
I think we want to sort of finish out this block.
Right.
We want to talk about Russia as it relates to the United States.
Yes.
So there's some updates here. This story, I think, came out like a couple weeks ago, but we didn't get a chance to talk about it on the podcast. But there was a pretty concerning article about how a Putin-linked think tank drafted this big plan to sway the 2016 election.
Yeah. So basically, the Russian Institute for Strategic Studies prepared these two documents and distributed them to high-level Kremlin officials. And the leader of this think tank is a Putin guy.
I've heard, too, that a lot of people in think tanks are kind of double as intelligence people.
Yes, absolutely.
So like, when you hear Trump people say, oh, I just met with like thought leaders and members of think tanks, a lot of them do work in the intelligence community.
Absolutely.
So there's a lot of overlap.
So the first paper, which was distributed last March, I believe, recommended creating a propaganda campaign on social media and Russian-backed and Russian-friendly global media outlets to encourage U.S. voters to elect a president with a softer view of Russia than Obama. So basically, they were just like, start this propaganda campaign.
And then the second document, distributed in October 2016, so right before our election, warned that Hillary Clinton was likely to win the election and that the propaganda should focus on questioning the legitimacy of her win and bringing that election process itself into a question, which Trump himself did a lot of. And I don't know if he did it on purpose
because
he was working with Putin or he's like that much of a jackhole.
Right.
But he did this sort of thing where he was talking about if, you know, if Hillary won, it would have been like, it would have been stolen basically from him. It would have been illegitimate. And that also undermined her ability to sort of fight back, given that she won the popular vote.
Right.
And there were some shady things around voting machines. So she couldn't even be like, this one was illegitimate, because we spent so much time being like, are you going to accept the results of the election?
Right. Well, and so these two documents were central to the Obama administration's conclusion that Russia supported a fake news attack on the 2016 election, and specifically on Clinton, because most of the information put out was more anti-Clinton than pro-Trump. And we've talked about this before. And, you know, so these papers do not mention cyber attacks or hacking specifically, but the strategies kind of laid out worked in tandem with the cyber attacks, which were more covert and carried out by the Kremlin itself rather than like media outlets or pro-Kremlin bloggers, basically. Yeah.
So I think people have referred to these kind of things as a quote unquote bloodless coup.
Yes, bloodless coup, which, I mean, Russia is on the forefront, like cutting edge of bloodless coup. Like they are they are good at it.
And we referenced an article a couple months ago about Cold War 2.0.
Yes,
and
which please read.
Yes, it's really fascinating. I believe it's in the New Yorker.
It's in the New Yorker. I will keep linking to it until everybody on earth reads it.
Yeah, it's, they're relying on a lot of internet strategies, cybersecurity measures, and just propaganda.
Yep. So, yeah, and so also kind of on the Russia vein.
Yeah, just to bring it back to the investigation.
Yeah, so the Senate Russia probe is sort of like in this like partisan bickering sort of nonsense.
It's floundering a little bit. So it's interesting because the House Intelligence Committee has been getting most of the publicity of like how bananas it is. And we thought that maybe the Senate Intelligence Committee had more of its shit together, but no.
It does not.
So, you know, over 3 months into this probe on the Senate side, where they're looking into Russian meddling of our election, the committee has yet to issue a single subpoena for documents or interview any key witnesses who are also central to the probe.
Yeah. I mean, and it hasn't requested any, like, potentially crucial evidence, such as emails, memos, phone records, in part because Chairman Richard Burr has so far failed to respond to requests from the panel's Democrats.
To sign letters to do so.
Right.
So they're held up.
They're held up, basically.
Yeah, and according to the Daily Beast, the Senate probe has no full-time staff. So they have 7 staffers assigned to it to review classified documents, but none of them are full-time and none of them have prosecutorial or investigative experience.
Okay, that sounds like a great idea.
Yeah. So
it's a really good plan, Senate.
But the House committee does seem to be back on track after, at least seemingly, after sort of ousting Nunes from this investigation.
But also with the Nunes thing, it really created like a split in the committee. So the Democrats basically want to interview people related to Russia. And the Republicans want to interview people related to the Susan Rice
leaking
fake thing.
Yeah, which isn't a thing.
Like, not a
both
thing.
People on both sides of the aisle said she did nothing
it's
wrong.
It's not a thing.
But yeah, so the House committee, we found out this past week, they're going to talk to FBI Director James Comey and NSA Director Mike Rogers in a closed-door session on May 2nd, and now they're looking to reschedule a public hearing with Sally Yates as well, and then James Comey and former CIA Director John Brennan would testify as well.
Right. And then Representative Mike Quigley,
who's a Democrat,
a member of the committee, he actually traveled to Cyprus to investigate Russian money laundering there, which, you guys, Bank of Cyprus.
Yeah.
Like, it's all full circle.
Yeah. I just want to end this part with a quote from the Daily Beast at the end of their article. So yes. They said, ultimately, the House and Senate investigations into Russia and possible Trump ties have both shown reasons to doubt their credibility. But with the House, it's been a public fiasco. With the Senate, it's been a private tragedy.
Yeah. We need an independent investigation.
Yeah. And actually, there was an NBC poll that came out today that showed nearly 3/4 of Americans support an independent investigation. So 73% of Americans were like, fuck yeah. Like, we don't trust Congress to do this.
I don't understand why this is so hard then.
Partisan, guys. Like, it's just the Republicans, like we've said before, you have to rip power from their cold, dead hands.
Yep. God damn it. Okay, Sarah. That's been a lot of shit.
as it is every episode.
As always. So why don't we get into our gratitude checks?
Oh, I love this part.
I know. So, Sarah, what are you grateful for?
Okay, so I am especially grateful for, the first thing I'm especially grateful for today is women running for office.
Yes.
So there was a story that came out a couple days ago, and Emily's List, their president says she's already heard from 11,000 women who want to run for office. And just for context, in 2016 alone, the grand total was 900.
Yeah.
So we already have 11,000 women only a few months into 2017 who are like, fuck yeah, I'm running.
Yeah.
I think
it's amazing.
It's amazing. And I think not only, I think, has the 2016 election sort of motivated women to like want to be more active, but I think it also has removed a lot of self-doubt.
Yes.
It's like, if this motherfucker can be president, why am I holding myself back?
Right, right. I can totally fucking do this.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you can. And I am so glad to see it.
Yes.
I loved one of Hillary's former comms guys, Jack Miller, his response to this story. He said on Twitter, okay, guys, Hillary Clinton is definitely Obi-Wan Kenobi here. Quote, if you strike me down, I shall become more powerful than you can possibly imagine.
I love when geek and politics collide, and it's so correct.
It's like animals that, like, regenerate.
Yes.
Like, you cut off something.
Right.
Which I'm not advocating for. If something gets cut off,
They regenerate.
But in this case, it's like 11,000 women have regenerated.
Yeah, dude.
From this one loss from one woman.
I mean, Trump pissed the wrong group of people off.
Yeah, he really did. Yeah, and honestly, like, this is one of the things that just gives me hope on dark days. Mm-hmm. I see so many women who are going, it sounds corny, I feel like are going to change the world.
It's not corny, it's true.
Yeah, and even women who aren't running for office, you know, we're organizing, we're protesting, we're calling, we're deciding that we're worthy to run.
Yeah.
We will not be vanquished.
Exactly. Like, fuck you.
Yeah, and I just want a little shout out, if you know any woman or non-binary person, who's doing cool shit at the local level, if they're running, if they were, you know, they have a great grassroots group, please let us know.
Yeah.
So that we can highlight them in this podcast.
Absolutely. We want to elevate those voices.
Mm-hmm. So the second thing I'm grateful for are Democrats who are targeting vulnerable Republicans in 2018. So one race I'm looking at in particular right now is Texas's 32nd congressional district. Hillary won this area by +2.
Mm-hmm.
But the GOP incumbent in the House won his race by more than 50 because there was no Democratic challenger.
Right.
And I think that's been a problem with the Democrats a lot is
they don't run.
We're not being competitive enough in places where we could be.
Right.
And I think that was another wake-up call. It's like, we got to build our bench.
Right.
And so Colin Allred, who's a former NFL player and now a civil rights lawyer.
Which, you guys, that's really sexy. Just for me personally.
And politically speaking,
that's so sexy.
And a lot of people responded to this article on our Twitter feed saying, this plays well in Texas.
It does play well in Texas.
Yeah, so he's gonna run for that seat. And so he played with the Tennessee Titans, and he was also in the Obama administration in the housing department. So he has some political experience as well. A recent poll found that Ted Cruz's Democratic challenger, Beto O'Rourke, he's running even with with Cruz. And also Joaquin Castro, who's a congressman in San Antonio, who's also sort of considering a run at Cruz's seat. He's outpolling Cruz as well. We don't know what's going to happen in 2018. There's a lot that can happen, but these are good signs.
These are good signs.
And actually, Texas is a state that a lot of people say we should look to turn blue.
Turn blue. Mm-hmm.
The last thing I'm grateful for is my rep, Ted Lieu.
Ted Lieu is so great.
I know. We're really, like, in Los Angeles, there's a spoiling of riches.
There really is.
Because Maxine Waters is one district over.
Yep.
But Ted Lieu is great. So I went to his town hall last week.
And that's right.
If you followed along, live tweeted it on Hellbent. He's just so funny. Mm-hmm. I just love how much of a fight he's putting in.
Oh, yeah.
I want him and Maxine Waters and Kirsten Gillibrand and Cory Booker and Adam Schiff. I want them to all go on Democratic tours.
Absolutely.
But he was great because he started the town hall off with Happy 420.
Only in California, guys.
Only in California. And he also said 99% of you here are probably like part of the resistance or like anti-Trump. And then like 1% isn't. And like too fucking bad, basically. He's like, we're going to resist Trump.
We're going to resist.
He just had a lot of gems. And he also has a pack that supports Democratic candidates. So he actually went over a lot of races in California that with vulnerable Republicans.
Yes. So his pack, like his name?
Yeah, it's the Lieu Leadership Pack.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it doesn't go to him. It goes to Democratic candidates. Yeah. So, and also Kathy Griffin was there.
Which
is just so LA. LA. It was great. Anyway, so that's what I'm grateful for. Devin, what are you grateful for this week?
Okay, so I have two. The first one is Bill Nye was on CNN for the Earth Day and the science marches on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And he was on a segment with climate change denier William Happer.
Mm.
And he basically just gave it to CNN for giving this douchebag platform, basically.
CNN has been terrible.
They've been kind of terrible, I'm not gonna lie. And Bill Nye gives like a really good schooling of the history of science and politics.
Mm.
He said, quote, science is political.
Yes.
But climate change is non-controversial in the scientific community.
Yeah.
And it's like gravity.
Yeah. And it's interesting because neither Devin nor I went to the science march this weekend. I had a hard time choosing whether I wanted to go because I'd heard that they had diversity inclusion issues. I know people who had issues with that but still went.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, I decided not to go. I don't know if that was the right decision or not.
Yeah, I don't know either.
It was a great showing, of the resistance.
Yes.
I think it's really important. Science is political. A lot of people try to pretend like science has no bias.
Right.
But a lot of the biases that are perpetuated in larger society, you see it reflected in science.
Absolutely. And also, it's also political insofar that, you know, the government with, like, scientific grants and research grants, like deciding where that money goes and how much money goes there, that's all very political.
Yeah, and it's similar with journalism. Like, what stories you choose to cover,
exactly.
How much attention you choose to cover, like, though it's, you can't really be fully objective.
Exactly. It's a myth in journalism. It's a myth in science.
Yeah. But anyway, Bill Nye, awesome.
Bill Nye's awesome. And he always wears this cute little bow tie, and I'm into it. And so the second thing that I'm grateful for is my alma mater, UC Davis.
Yeah. You pointed me to the story, and I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah. So UC Davis has a vending machine that sells condoms, tampons, Advil, pregnancy tests, and Plan fucking B.
You guys.
I know. Just, you can get it right out of a vending machine.
Amazing.
So
that's better than a cupcake vending machine.
It's amazing. And so Davis, at least from the time that I attended, has always been awesome about reproductive rights and reproductive justice. They offer comprehensive sex education, resources, birth control, and support for women and men alike. They have what's called the Love Lab.
Oh, that's amazing.
It's funded by the school and offered free to all students, and they work very hard to keep the space, like, judgment-free. It's basically a mobile cart stocked with safer sex products available to UC Davis students at no charge. It travels around campus, and students can pick up lube and 10 condoms per person per visit.
You're like, listen, we got to cap it.
We got to cap it.
At a certain point.
And they also made this really awesome map of where you can find safer sex items in the Davis Sacramento area if you need something after lab hours.
You guys, California is not perfect, but California is pretty amazing sometimes.
And here's the other thing. I'm just going to wax poetic a little bit about Davis because I love it. I went there.
Mm-hmm.
So Davis is sort of like the low-key liberal of the UC system.
Mm.
You know, everyone always thinks that like Berkeley is a bastion of liberalism, and it is.
No, but you're right, though.
Yeah.
Like, the Republican Club at Berkeley was the biggest club on campus.
Right.
But I also think that was because the campus as a whole was so progressive that the Republicans needed a centralized place to have a safe space.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but Davis is like this small college town full of smart, politically active people. And it, you know, it really does like set up these very like liberal, inclusive policies and on campus. And, you know, it was a fantastic, it's a fantastic place. And so it makes me so happy to get to hear them get recognized for this like really hard work that they do.
Go Aggies.
Go Aggies. Okay, Sarah. So it is Monday.
Yeah.
So it is time for the Donald Trump dishonor in Dick Watery.
Yeah. And like we mentioned before, there were so many Dick Wads to choose from just from the past few days. But we had to keep it to one dishonorable mention and then obviously the Dick Wad of the week because we have lots of feels.
We have so many feels.
Dishonorable mention especially.
Okay. So who's the dishonorable mention, Sarah?
You guys... It's fucking Bernard.
It's fucking Bernard. I'm so done with this.
Again, I just want to make it abundantly clear. We would much rather be in a position where we could cheerlead Bernie.
Seriously.
It's honestly so fucking exhausting pushing back on his bullshit all the time. But alas, here we are again. And I just want to point out, I was a Hillary supporter in 2008, but I fucking loved Obama.
Yeah, me too.
There were plenty of things I disagreed with him on, but like... I've been here before, and I want to like the person.
Right.
But, and actually, I'm making this muddy because it isn't even Hillary versus Bernie.
No.
Like, a lot of people were saying, oh, the Hillary versus Bernie fight is starting again. But this is very Bernie specific.
Yeah.
This is, so, a little context here. So, Bernie fully revealed himself last week. I mean, I've long seen this streak.
Well, yeah.
But... Yeah, I mean, he's the king of nothing is ever good enough, and all of a sudden, he's deciding to compromise on fucking abortion.
I mean, he was just dickwadding all over the place this week.
Yeah, there's so many things that we can't even cover that he said, but we want to focus on this abortion issue.
Right.
And I wasn't happy with Tom Perez either,
right,
who initially backed Bernie up on this. But, you know, Tom Perez, to his credit, soon realized this was bullshit.
Bullshit.
He was getting a lot of pushback, and he actually put out a statement that drew a line in the sand.
Right.
Like, Democrats support abortion rights. Period. End of story.
Right. It's so, on the party platform.
Yeah. So just context. So Bernie endorsed and is stumping for an anti-choice candidate, Keith Mello, who's running for mayor of Omaha, Nebraska.
Yeah. Well, and I would just like also take this moment to point out that he refused to call John Ossoff, who is pro-choice, pro-civil rights, and pro-Obamacare, etc., progressive.
Yeah. So I think that's where like people were like, okay, wait. So you're like... really like actively uplifting this Heath Mello guy who is pretty terrible on choice.
Right.
But you're being shady toward John Ossoff.
Right.
Bernie eventually realized that he was being a hypocritical fuck. Because like the next day he was like, I want John Ossoff to win. Like he kind of endorsed him, I think. He didn't call him a progressive, but whatever.
Whatever.
But I think that's the closest to an admission of fault that we're ever going to get from Bernie.
All right, Bernard.
So... You know, we actually got an email from a listener saying, you know, Mello, there's some complexities here. I just want to say, like, I understand we're not always going to get the most pro-choice people or most pro-choice Democrats in certain areas. But I think that the problem for me is Bernie deciding that compromising on abortion rights is cool.
Right. Well, and also there are complexities. And I don't want to deny those, especially in red or deep red areas running Democratic candidates. They're not going to be... Like, I don't believe in purity tests, you know? I am not Bernard. But the thing is he's not talking about those complexities. Mm-hmm. He's not, like, pointing out that there might be whatever. He's just deciding that women's reproductive rights are bargaining.
Yes.
That they're not important to him.
And honestly, I mean, if we were going to have purity tests, I would say a, you know, person's right to their own body should maybe be one of them.
Duh.
But I understand what you're saying.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I'm not going to sit here and, you know.
Right. So just on Mello, just to give a little background on him. He co-sponsored a 2009 bill requiring doctors to offer ultrasounds before abortion. He sponsored a 20-week term limit on abortion in 2010. He voted in favor of stripping abortion coverage from insurance plans in Nebraska. And there are some people that cited a sort of 100% rating from Planned Parenthood, but Planned Parenthood of Nebraska has vehemently refuted this.
Denied that,
They said there was two votes that were, you know, that maybe they... that were not anti-choice.
Right.
And that's where that number comes from. But they're like, no, like, this is not reflective of at 100% rating.
Right.
So yeah, like we said, we get it. Not all areas are going to be able to elect 100% pro-choice candidates. Okay, fine.
Right.
But why dedicate time, energy, and resources to this mayoral race?
Right. When really, like, John Ossoff running for the 6th in Georgia is a way bigger, like, fish to fry, you know?
Yeah. And not to mention, like, if you're going to say, okay, say you want to get involved in local races, Bernard.
Fine. Great.
Why wouldn't he go to St. Louis?
Right.
Where there was a progressive black woman named Tashora Jones who was running against a quote-unquote status quo Democrat. So she ran in the Democratic primary in St. Louis recently. She only lost by 888 votes. So why are you stumping for Mello,
right,
but not someone like her who probably is more in your sort of
vein? Yeah, absolutely.
So there, I just have a lot of questions about his choices.
And right.
To me, it's very clear that he is more than willing to throw women under the bus, because he, you know, he said in trying to sort of defend this decision, he said, if we're going to protect a woman's right to choose, at the end of the day, we're going to need Democratic control over the House and Senate and state governments all over this nation. But again, this is a mayoral race. So
yeah.
That doesn't even achieve what you're saying it should.
Right. Well, and then some people were trying to falsely equate Mello to Tim Kaine, but there's really no comparing them.
Yeah. I mean, you guys, there's plenty to criticize Kaine on in this issue,
right,
like flip-flopping on the Hyde Amendment.
Right.
But his votes in recent years have been firmly pro-choice, pretty firmly pro-choice, even though he has said he's personally against abortion.
Right. And look, here's the thing. Politicians are people.
Yeah.
And they're entitled to their personal opinions.
Mm-hmm.
And Kaine, I think, is a really great example of someone who has personal opinions and, for the most part, leaves them out of the legislation.
Well, and this is just an example of what it means to be pro-choice. You
right.
can personally be against abortion
all day long,
but respect a woman's right to choose.
Exactly.
And that is what Tim Kaine has said over and over again,
right,
especially in the past couple of years.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I could care less if someone was personally pro-choice,
pro-life or whatever,
or anti-choice, as long as you don't make it the law of the land.
And trust us, we're going after Democrats who aren't fully pro-choice either.
Completely.
So this is not just on Bernard, but
no.
if he's trying to make himself the face of the party that he's not even a fucking member of,
right,
then he is setting a bad example on abortion.
Right. And there is no economic justice without reproductive justice, period.
That is the thing. And that's the thing with Bernie.
Yeah.
If you're all about economic justice, why aren't you giving speeches about how women cannot achieve economic justice without reproductive justice?
Absolutely.
So just a couple of stats here. Women who carry unwanted pregnancies to term are more likely to live in poverty. And in fact, between 40 and 75% of women seeking abortions do so for financial reasons. I mean,
yeah,
it's really fucking expensive to be a mom.
It really is.
Yeah. I don't know. So many feelings.
Well, and then mothers are less likely to be hired for jobs, and they are offered lower starting salaries when they are hired.
Yeah. I just want to finish with Rebecca Traister's take, because she's someone who just stays fucking brilliant always. So she wrote about this, and she said, in the midst of one of the most activated, energized, ground-up movements in modern democratic political history, where the energy is coming from women who remain underrepresented in state and federal legislatures, the Democratic Unity Tour, with its two men making pronouncements about what the party should do next, felt exceedingly out of touch. And the dynamic, the women doing the labor of organizing and protesting and campaigning, knocking on doors and making calls and sending postcards, while guys speak from the microphones about the need to compromise on their rights, that's depressingly retro.
It's true.
So that just says it all to me.
Yeah.
And to me, this issue highlights a problem I've had with Bernie for a long time, is he doesn't include intersectionality in his economic understanding.
Right.
And this is a very clear example of this.
Right. Okay. And so now for the dickwad of the week, it is Jeff Sessions, which I feel like it just keeps being Jeff Sessions.
Yeah. So if you're wondering why we're giving it to Jeff Sessions this week, I mean, we could really give it to him every week.
For any reason.
He's a racist fuck. So Sessions attacked Derek Watson, who's a U.S. district judge in Hawaii. He attacked him for halting Trump's revised ban on travel and immigration from 6 majority Muslim countries.
And I want to read the quote that Jeff Sessions said.
It's atrocious.
It's atrocious. Quote, I really am amazed that a judge sitting on an island in the Pacific can issue an order that stops the President of the United States from what appears to be clearly his statutory and constitutional power. Listen asshole.
Lay in, Devin. Okay.
So, Senator Hirano from
Hawaii
said, "Hey, Jeff Sessions, this hashtag island in the Pacific has been the 50th state for going on 58 years, and we won't succumb to your dog whistle politics."
And, you know, like, Hawaii becoming a state was is something that's already been fraught
right.
with issues.
Right.
And it's honestly a slap in the face to act like they're less than.
Yeah, and this...
Yeah, I like what Hirano also said.
Yes, yeah.
The suggestion that being from Hawaii somehow disqualifies Judge Watson from performing his constitutional duty is dangerous, ignorant, and prejudiced.
It's just, it's bigoted as fuck.
Yeah.
And it's horrifying that the nation's top lawyer is attacking a member of the independent judiciary. This is scary. This is what authoritarian regimes do. Also, Sessions voted to confirm Watson in 2013.
Yeah.
Like, so what the fuck are you doing with your life, Jeff Sessions?
Yeah, did you see, like, the damage control
yes.
that DOJ tried to do, which made it worse?
It really did.
I think they tried to, like, call Hawaii, like, a beautiful place, like, as if that made Sessions' comments any better. And then they said there is a problem when a flawed opinion by a single judge can block the president's lawful exercise of authority to keep the entire country safe, which is, like...
It's checks and balances, bitch.
It's checks and balances. That is our government.
That's why we have the independent judiciary.
And this is
how this works.
This is the second time your travel ban has been voted down. So maybe it's not the judiciary.
Maybe it's fucking you.
Maybe it's fucking you.
You know, we're just not that into you, Jeff Sessions.
In any other administration, I feel like Sessions would have been forced to resign.
He needs to go the fuck away, right now.
And even after all that Russia stuff, he should have fucking resigned.
Well, yeah, and now, like, he just needs to step the fuck down.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just needs to take his racist rhetoric elsewhere. Okay, guys, that is it for us.
We got a lot of feelings out.
Got a lot of feelings out. That felt good.
Yeah. Like we said earlier, we're going to have a special guest on Thursday.
Yes.
She's really great. We'll announce it on Patreon for people who are $5 contributors and up. And we really look forward to this conversation with our special guest.
So we will see you on Thursday, and thank you for listening. For more information on today's episode, please visit our website at www.hellbentpodcast.com. You'll find the articles we've discussed as well as additional resources. You can follow us on Twitter at HellbentPod, and you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/HellbentPodcast. You can follow Devin on Twitter at DevinHandy, and you can follow Sarah on Twitter at Sarah Lerner.
Please listen on iTunes and rate us 5 stars, because that's just like the rules of feminism. We also have a Patreon, and you can find us at patreon.com/HellbentPodcast. You can support us for as little as $1 a month, and for $5 a month, you get access to exclusive content, mini podcasts, and behind-the-scenes looks at the making of Hellbent. And there are lots of other fun rewards for higher levels of patronage, including a monthly Skype session with Devin and Sarah.
And for that one, drinking is optional.
Optional.
Quote unquote.